And welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host, an old friend of ours, author Mike Aquilina. His book, Rabbles, Riots, and Ruins, 12 Ancient Cities and How They Were Evangelized, published by our friends at Ignatius Press, naturally available through our EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com, for all things Catholic. Always a pleasure to see you, Mike.
Thanks for having me back, Doug.
We had you on the show many times, and of course, you've been on multiple shows over the years, co-hosting with Scott Hahn, many, many series, and of course, recently on EWTN Live and on Women in Grace as well. So you get around. how many books is this for you?
It's in the 70s. I don't know specifically.
You started writing them in the 70s? You're in your 70s? It's not that you have 70 books.
It's that I have 70 books.
Yeah. Over what period of time have you written 70 books?
I guess the first one came out around 93. Mm-hmm. So it's since 93.
And so 30-something plus years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So do you ever see your family?
I do. I do my writing at home. So every now and then I look up from the keyboard and there they are.
Right. Do you have a specific place in your home where you do your writing?
I do. I have an office.
Okay. Yeah, and particular time of the day you write?
All the time. You know, even when I'm driving, I'm writing. I'm thinking about whatever project I'm working on and what I'm going to say next.
Well, how do you evangelize a city?
How do you evangelize a city? The same way you evangelize a block or a neighborhood or anything, and that is through friendship. Mm-hmm. You know, people want to have a master plan. They want to know what's going to happen. You know, and here are the steps, and these are our measurements, and we're gonna take over. Mm-hmm. And that's not the way it worked, it seemed. Mm-hmm. You know, when St. Paul went into a city, he didn't have a clear idea about what was going to happen. Often, he ended up being the object of scorn and violence and getting arrested and going on trial and that sort of thing. But he went into a city and he just started making friends. Mm-hmm. And he started telling people about Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it happened, pretty much, through those hundreds of years of formative Christianity. Right.
What made you think about of setting it up that way, of focusing not necessarily on a particular saint and where they ministered or a particular country, but actually these cities? What made you focus on those cities?
Well, you know, I travel a lot for my work, right? Okay. So I go and I talk about these books that I've written, and I visit a lot of cities, and I fall in love with them. Mm-hmm. And what I noticed is that cities are very different from one another. You know, you're never going to confuse Bismarck, North Dakota with Manhattan, right? You're just not going to make that mistake. Each city has a personality. It has a character. Mm-hmm. It has something distinct about it, or a lot of things distinct about it. Its own topography, its own history, its own culture, its own kind of mix, ethnic mix and everything. So every city is so different, and that's true now, and it was true in the ancient world. Mm-hmm. When we imagine those times, and when we imagine evangelization, we kind of picture it as the same sword and sandal movie with the same set. The same pillars standing in the air, the same people standing around in the same toga, right? And this is the way Hollywood has trained us to imagine it. I wanted people to get to know the cities, their particular character, their topography, and how, you know, what was distinct about each of them shaped the beginnings of Christianity there, and then the subsequent history of Christianity afterwards.
So there's something special about cities. You talk about Jerusalem's the first one, obviously.
Yeah.
You talk about the concept in the New Jerusalem. You talk about in the Book of Revelation, the worst thing that could happen possibly to you is that you'll be left out of the city, which is the place where the tree of life grows now.
Yeah.
Why is heaven a city? Why not a big, happy farm? Why not?
Well, because of a lot of things in our religious history and in our social history as well. When we look at the history of Christianity, that as we see it in the New Testament and in other texts from the early church fathers, we can see that the faith moved from city to city. Cities had harbors. Cities had ports. It was easy to get in and out of cities, and
that's why they were built there.
That's right. And then you get off the boat, and you can find a lot of other people there. Mm. You know, so you're more likely to find people who will be willing to receive your message.
Would you also, in a port city, naturally find people from other parts of the world, a more of a mixed culture than maybe a firm local culture?
A mixed culture. And, you know, a lot of sociologists talk about that, that when you get, when you're in a city, if you are deviant from the social norm in any way, you will find other people who are deviant in the way you are. Mm-hmm. Christianity was a deviant thing in the ancient world. That's why it was persecuted mm-hmm. by the Persians and by the Romans and by the Armenians and by everyone. Christianity ended up, you know, being persecuted to death. Mm-hmm. And why is that? Well, because it was so out of the ordinary. Mm-hmm. When you arrived in a city, well, you could find more people like yourselves. You could find those who were already Christian, mm-hmm. but you can also find people who are searchers, seekers.
Right, you talk about that one would go to a synagogue, mm-hmm. and besides the actual Jews who were there, there would be these kind of, it was a phrase you had for
God-fearers.
God-fearers,
you know,
right.
And they were not ready to observe the whole of the law. They were not ready to observe all the dietary restrictions. They were not ready to undergo circumcision as adults. But they were interested in the law. They were interested in monotheism mm-hmm. and all of these very positive aspects of traditional Jewish culture. Mm-hmm. And so they were drawn to the synagogue, they attended the synagogue, and they tried to live a life according to the law as best they could, according to their own lights. And I believe that many of these were among the first to become the early Christians.
Well, you say Christianity began as a religion associated with cities. In fact, the word pagan originally meant a country dweller.
Yes.
I thought it meant people with beards, but that's
No. Pagans were those folks in the country because the assumption was that they hadn't heard the gospel. Mm-hmm. Now, that's probably unfair, and a lot of the rural areas did receive the gospel early on, and there's a lot of archaeological evidence of that, and there's also a lot of documentary evidence of that. Mm-hmm. So Christianity probably did reach out beyond the cities from mm-hmm. a very early date, but the city dwellers themselves kind of looked down their noses at those people, and as more and more city dwellers became Christian, they continued to do that.
That was kind of the country bumpkin
yes,
idea for
yes,
them as well,
yes.
right? It's also, you talk about the book of Revelation, and you talk about the seven cities, Patmos, Smyrna, Pergamum, etc., Sardis, Philadelphia, Laodicea, of course we have Thyatira. How come you didn't pick any of those?
That's a good question. Well, I had at first planned to do a book about four cities, mm-hmm. and that they were Rome, Jerusalem, Antioch, and Alexandria. But then I said, well, no, I want to do this city too. And I'd add another city and another city. And pretty soon I had a lot more than 20 cities. Mm-hmm. And so I said, that's too many.
Okay.
That's overkill. So I had to start cutting the list back. And so I'm sure that some of those cities
were in there.
And some others that I really love, like Corinth, mm-hmm. I ended up cutting out, you know, as the last cut.
I would think that, and weren't they having wild times in Corinth?
Like, oh, yeah.
I think that was notorious, wasn't it?
It is. And, you know, St. Paul wrote two letters to the Corinthians, possibly a third mm-hmm. that we don't have. But also, Pope St. Clement I wrote a long letter to the Corinthians because Corinth was still a disciplinary problem years after Paul's death. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, you talk about here the idea, and I thought it's interesting we think of ourselves as Roman Catholics. I hadn't thought of it this way, where you say the Christians tended to see the world as a sprinkling of cities. That's the way the Romans thought about it itself.
Yes.
And you talk about how, in fact, the Roman Empire was really governed more or less as an association of cities.
Yes, and so the city was very important, and you identified with your particular city. That was your marker, your identity marker. Now you could be demoted, mm-hmm. and your status.
Yeah,
as
so that you open up with the Antioch is going to no, you will no longer be known as a city.
Yeah,
and that was a big problem. Why?
Well, it's scary. Then you lose certain rights, you lose okay. certain degrees of autonomy because you're under someone else's authority at that point.
Okay, would and that be under us?
Another city,
another
possibly.
City nearby. I see.
Yeah, okay. Or you know, maybe the emperor would take a special interest in you, and that's something you wouldn't want.
I see. Okay, so you also talk about. The Ephesus, you talk about St. Paul, and he provoked a near riot by the silversmiths who made souvenirs for the pilgrims to the shrine of Artemis, which was a big attraction. Is that where he ran into problems with Alexander the silversmith there? Well, I know he had a problem in 2 Timothy
oh,
with
oh,
that.
Oh, with the coppersmith. He was a coppersmith. Yeah.
He was one of my favorites. I always thought that. But apparently, I guess he just wasn't open to his arguments, apparently, what I read later. But I always thought maybe he had a problem with because he was making things for idols or something.
No, I think that was this. Primarily the silversmith riot was caused by economic fear. You know, you're going to take away our livelihood. The Temple of Artemis was one of the great tourist destinations of the ancient world. It was one of the seven wonders. So people came from all over to see it. And I have one poem in there by a famous poet about how that was the greatest of the seven wonders. Mm. So this would have serious economic implications if Ephesus became Christian.
Right. It kind of relates a little bit to, in some ways, with our Lord getting upset about the temple in Jerusalem, with the idea of the sacrifices. If you couldn't have a lamb, you get doves or pigeons, but except they were charging astronomically more for them
than what they should have been,
which is why he was so upset about that too.
Yes. Right. So that's what's going on there.
It was a business to be had there, too.
right.
Exactly. So you always talk about, I thought it was interesting, too, and I remember growing up on Long Island, noticing the difference. You talk about the Jewish community, you talk about the temple in Jerusalem. Then when the temple is destroyed, you talk about the synagogues, which we had around. And on Long Island, you'd say, well, some places would be called temples, and others would be synagogues. And the understanding was that had to do with whether you were a conservative Jew or a Reformed Jew, because the Jews would believe, the more conservative or Orthodox would say, there was only one temple, and that's the one in Jerusalem.
That's right. And some of the Reformed synagogues are called temples in Pittsburgh as well, and that's true everywhere.
So one of the things that seems to have been a regular feature of synagogue meetings was inviting interesting travelers to speak a few words of wisdom. So this is when Jesus came home to Nazareth, that's when he said what he said that got everybody all worked up.
That's right, and you see the same pattern happening in the Acts of the Apostles. When the apostles entered a town, they would begin with the synagogue, because the assumption is that there are more people there who know our religious context. They know the prophets. We can speak to them directly and efficiently about the fulfillment of the oracles of the prophets. And so they did that they did that wherever they went, and they announced the gospel in that way. It seems, from what we can tell, that in many of those ancient cities, the church grew out of the synagogue, because there you'd meet the Jews who were open to this message of fulfillment, but also you would meet those God-fearers we were talking about earlier.
Well, in the early days, and I wasn't sure what you were saying, did most people as Christians basically just see themselves as Jews, you know, who just had expanded knowledge, or did they see it as, because it wasn't until later, obviously, even the word Christian came out, you talk about what city that showed up in.
It seems from the earliest Christian text that was a live discussion, because sometimes there were advantages in being identified with the Jews. You were exempt from certain requirements, certain laws. Mm-hmm. You were also exempt from certain taxes, right? On the other hand, you might have to pay certain taxes. And as these circumstances arose, Christians would sometimes identify with the Jews and sometimes not. The Jews would sometimes consider Christians to be Jews, fellow Jews, and sometimes not. So there were many questions at this time about identity. Because the earliest Christians did not think of themselves as a new religion. They simply called themselves the Way.
The Way, right.
It was the way forward. And it was just this supernatural progression that was a fulfillment of what we call the Old Testament.
Not to be confused with the later cult of the last century called Way International.
That's right.
So it's Antioch is when Christians were called, related that way. Let's talk about Rome. Rome was the capital of the world and became the capital of church, where Peter took up residence there. Rome was notorious for shows where dying Christians were the entertainment. Emperors so weak that the popes finally had to do the emperor's job, like with Attila and things like that. But yeah, and you talk about Nero and laying the blame on the Christians.
Yes. Yes. So there was a real development over centuries there, right? Mm-hmm. We know that the Christians arrived in Rome, that they were blamed for unrest at times, and especially for their quarrels with Jews in Rome. So the Christians were noticed from early on. Mm. And surely there was some resentment of the Christians, because they came with this moral message. And it's not the way the Romans were living at all. You know, the Christians were speaking up against things like fornication. Well, the Romans were not stupid, right? Mm-hmm. And they knew from their own traditions that fornication was wrong. Mm-hmm. But they didn't want to give it up.
Right.
Right?
Well, the Roman family was, in theory, very important.
The Roman family was important on paper, right?
Right, right, right.
But in real life, divorce was exploding all over the place. Then one of the most important industries in Rome was private investigators, so that you could find out whether your spouse was cheating or not. Mm. This was, you know, you see these signs now when you're driving down down the road, you see suspicious, give us a call,
that
kind of thing. That kind of business was going on in ancient Rome as well. The family was falling apart. Thinkers in Rome were concerned about it, but they certainly did not want to listen to any advice that this foreign cult was trying to give them. They weren't about to listen to that.
Right.
So there was resentment, and Nero took advantage of that.
You talk about Alexandria in Egypt as a trading center. Jewish intellectuals, didn't the Septuagint come out of there, basically?
Yes.
But in spite of his intellectual, Alexandria was also notorious as a city of riots. Is that where you got the riot from, that in Antioch?
Well, there are riots in many cities in this book.
Why the riots in Alexandria?
Well, Alexandria was famous for its riots. That's one thing. It was prone to riot, and probably because it had so many smart people there. Mm. You know, I used to think of Alexandria as a university town, like Cambridge.
Yeah, well, you think of the library. You always hear the great library of Alexandria, right? Yeah.
But it was really more like one large university government, right? Mm-hmm. If you went there and you were a super intellectual, you would end up with a government stipend just to think great thoughts. Mm-hmm. The library was there, as you say. There were other research institutes. The first great Christian school was there, and it arose in the 100s, in the second century. So there's a lot of intellectual vitality there. But one thing you have to understand about the ancient world that makes it very different from our own world is that people talked to people, right? We didn't have the internet, right? We didn't have newspapers. Mm-hmm. We didn't have many books. We didn't have magazines or any other media. There were no other media to mediate our relations. So if you wanted to learn things, if you wanted to get news about the outside world or even news about your village, you left your house. Mm-hmm. You went into a public place.
Right, a forum or something like that. Right,
right, and you had conversations with your neighbors. Imagine this. Mm-hmm. But, so you'd go out there, you'd have a conversation. Sometimes conversations lead to disagreements. Sometimes disagreements get heated. Sometimes a lot of the people
leads to riots.
Standing nearby get involved.
But it's also a way of evangelization.
That's
that was
it.
Probably happening as well.
That's it.
And there's some other, Edessa, a city where is Edessa?
It's now in Turkey,
okay.
But then it was this borderland between, shared by the Roman and Persian empires. So it was sometimes within Roman territory, it was sometimes within Persian territory, and there was this back and forth.
And
they suffered a lot as a result.
Now, there was some king who allegedly had some correspondence with our Lord, is that what it is?
That was the legend that they had
King
in that
Agbar
town.
Or something.
Yes,
like that, right?
And so he wanted to be cured. You know, it's likely that he had leprosy, and he writes a letter to our Lord. He sends it with a messenger. The messenger speaks with Jesus and tells him about the king and his sickness, and Jesus heals him from a distance. The messenger, meanwhile, paints a portrait of Jesus and takes it back to Edessa. Mm-hmm. And that portrait, of course, was copied many times. It becomes identified with the city of Edessa. Mm-hmm. And they have quotations from these letters, you know, engraved in the walls around the city because they saw it as the promise of protection upon their city, eventually, when they became Christian. But that didn't happen for a while.
Okay. What's interesting, and you also have Lyon, the early version of Lugdunum.
Yes.
Okay. Before that, and there's another one here in Armenia, which has three different names. I'll let you decide which one you want. But what's, I guess, part of in Constantinople, Milan, and Ravenna, Carthage, etc., is to show that there were different cultures in different cities.
Yes.
And that's part of the reasons why the church grew up culturally different.
Diverse,
right,
yes,
diverse,
with
right.
all these different liturgical groups emerging already in the early years of the church, and the scriptures being translated into all of these languages, not just once, but sometimes many times over. Mm-hmm. There were many different Latin editions of the Bible. And Jerome's task in the 4th and 5th centuries was to...
I don't think there was any Bibles until Luther came along. No,
that's no. That's a funny one. but Jerome translated the Bible many times, mm-hmm. Over the course of his life, because he was first fine-tuning it, and then he was trying to perfect it by going back to the original sources.
Well, you also talk about Carthage, obviously, in North Africa, and I think about it, but yeah, obviously, they allegedly salted the ground. I'm not sure they actually did that, but certainly the idea was that Romans didn't want to have a fourth Punic War.
That's right.
So they decided, but they rebuilt it 100 years later, and it became a Christian center?
It became a Roman colony, and mm-hmm. what's interesting about Carthage is it becomes this center of intellectual culture and of the fine arts in the Latin language, and so it emerges mm-hmm. as the first major Latin Christian center. Mm-hmm. It's likely that the Mass was said in Latin for the first time in Carthage, and that they had the Mass in Latin in Carthage before it was anywhere else. Possibly, some scholars think they had a Latin Mass in Carthage more than 100 years before they had it in Rome. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our style as Western Christians, a lot of our style as Roman Catholics mm-hmm. actually comes out of Africa and this commercial capital of Africa, Carthage. Yeah.
Basically North Africa.
Yes.
And then, of course, of which there's hardly very many Christians. I mean, you've got the Copts in Egypt, but outside of that, because of basically the Muslim invasions.
Yes. Yes.
Which kind of took that over. You also talk about the different cities you left out, like you said, Corinth, Thessalonica, even Bethlehem as being one. You talk about Jerusalem, and of course we go back to, I remember being a kid growing up and suddenly some guy showed up named Melchizedek, who I'd never heard of, from some place called Salem that wasn't in Massachusetts. What's his deal? and how did he relate to the Jews and the one God?
Yeah. Well, he comes up in the book of Genesis, and he's the first to be mentioned in the Bible as a priest. And he's a priest and a king. Mm-hmm. So right there in Genesis, you have the establishment of this this type that will be fulfilled in King David, who had priestly status and also was the king, mm-hmm. right? And then that will be ultimately fulfilled in Jesus Christ, who is priest and king and prophet. So Melchizedek becomes an important figure. That of course is in the earlier version mm. of the city before it was conquered by King David, okay. because for all those centuries it was the last holdout,
right.
the last holdout of the Canaanites in the Holy Land. You know, it had not been conquered,
right.
and only with David do we find the Israelites,
right.
you know, penetrating the city and taking it over.
At some particular Alexandria, you're dealing with. You talk about early church fathers and those who, Clement of Alexandria, also Origen, who had some interesting ideas about soul extinction, as I think I recall. And then also, different heresies showing up. I don't know whether Antioch was a popular place for heresies. I forget whether Arius showed up there or where he popped up.
He was trained there.
Okay, so.
But he manifested his heresy in Alexandria.
Okay.
He returned to what was seen as the intellectual and cultural capital of the empire.
So along the way, you meet a lot of great Catholic saints who do battle in different cities, depending on what's going on at the time. Is some of that indicative of the different cultures in those cities, the kinds of heresies that would show up in those towns?
Yeah, and you meet a lot of villains, too. Arius is one of those villains mm-hmm. you meet. Julian the Apostate
okay.
is another one of those villains. He's in our chapter on Antioch, because mm-hmm. that's where he decided to go to make it his capital. Constantinople had been the capital of the Eastern Empire, but he didn't want to be in Constantinople. Why is that? Because his uncle Constantine founded it as a Christian city.
Mm-hmm.
There were no temples in Constantinople. There was no real pagan intellectual life. So he wanted to move back in time. He wanted to put the empire in reverse and get back to the traditional Roman religion. And he kind of reinvented it along the lines of the Catholic Church,
okay,
so that it would be competitive with the Catholic Church. It would have a structure like the Catholic Church. He would be Pope, and it all ended up being a colossal failure because that's not the way Roman paganism worked. It was like herding cats. Really.
So in doing this research, maybe it wasn't surprising for you, but reading the book Armenia, what's the deal there? Why is Armenia important?
Armenia is important because it was the first Christian nation.
Really?
Okay. Yes, because the king converted there during a time when the Roman Empire was persecuting Christians, and so was the Persian Empire. Mm. So here's this guy in one of these borderlands between the two, and he makes the courageous step of converting, mm-hmm. and with him converting his country. Because then what right. follows is the building of Christian churches and other things. Like, he put a lot of effort, and so did his successors, into translating Christian documents into the Armenian language, and really kind of inventing a new language in order to record these Christian documents.
Let me ask you one question. This one popped up. Lord Byron, what was he doing in here?
Well, he's one of the great, in one of his stays in Venice, he took an interest in Armenian. And so he was staying in an Armenian monastery, and he was working with the monks there to write this first textbook for English speakers who want to learn Armenian. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a crazy idea, and it's a crazy figure to meet in a
right,
in
especially
a
if you know about his early
church.
Life.
Yes.
And why he was, you allude to him being in UK because he had no money, and he was uh-huh. obviously was avoiding the husbands of many women, apparently.
Right.
So listen, you've got 70 books. So what do you have? Multiple going on at once right now, or how many are you trying to write at once?
One.
Right. Okay. Yeah. You have any idea what the next one is?
I want to write a book about the Archangel Michael.
Okay.
And the history of devotion to him down through the ages, right. especially among the ancient rabbis, and in the intertestamental literature, the pseudepigrapha, and then in the works of the early church fathers, because it's fascinating. And until I started digging into it, I just hadn't encountered it anywhere.
Okay. Sounds like a great book to be on EWTN, Mother Angelica. Loved St. Michael the Archangel. Thanks so much, Mike. Always great to be with you. Mike Aquilina, Rabbles, Riots, and Ruins, 12 Ancient Cities and How They Were Evangelized. Very interesting. Published by Ignatius Press and available naturally through our EWTN Religious Catalog. EWTNRC.com. Check it out and check us out next time right here on EWTN's Bookmark. Thanks.